From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 259, recorded live Thursday, March 27th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Control, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Martin Woodward about remote Java development using TFS.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today I'm talking to Martin Woodward. You're in England? Britain? What's the rules? Do I say England or Britain? What's the difference?
Well, it's a bit controversial to begin
Uh-oh.
With.
We're starting right off the bat with controversy.
Merely talking about that can get into trouble.
You're in Ireland, or where are you?
Northern Ireland. So it's
oh, see,
of
I don't
UK,
even know. Now we're in big political trouble.
Exactly.
Where is that? That's its own thing, though.
Yeah. It's not part of Great Britain, but it's part of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
So, okay.
A tricky one, but I am English, so I'll take any of those.
Okay, so you're an English man in Northern Ireland, but you work for Microsoft, though.
Pardon?
You work for Microsoft, though. You're in remote Northern Ireland, and I am in remote Oregon.
Yeah.
How
did this
happen? I hear
you talk about working remote sometimes, and, you know, I think it's hardly remote. You're only a 3-4 hour drive away from Redmond, aren't you?
Well, 3 or 4 hours feels like a long way to me. How far are you from Redmond?
A 20-hour flight, I think, probably is. A good chunk of air miles, that's for sure.
Are you in a village, or are you in a proper city?
No, I'm in a village. I actually live in a field just outside of a town called Randallstown, if anyone knows Northern Ireland. So
it's, you just got a fiber optic link
basis.
Directly
We've
into
got
the field.
Solar panels on our roof for the hot water, and we actually had free hot water this afternoon, so that's great. That shows you how nice it is. Not normally this sunny.
That's pretty progressive. So how does an Englishman living in Northern Ireland end up working for Microsoft remotely?
So, long story. The company I used to work for was a company called TeamPrize. So that was founded by a guy called Eric Sink, who you know very well, and many of your listeners probably know. So, and Eric's a cool guy, and he was looking to get some people to start up an Eclipse plugin to Team Foundation Server, was what he was wanting to do. And it just so happened that I'd been working on kind of a similar thing as a side project, you know, as many people do. I do some .NET and some Java work, and when I was in the .NET world professionally, then I would go do some Java work on the side, and when I was doing some Java work professionally, I'd go do some .NET work in my spare time, just to keep your hand in. And so I'd been doing some work. I'd been working with TFS very early betas in a .NET gig I was working on, and working on an Eclipse plugin to TFS in my spare time as an open source project. And then Eric sort of did a blog post about he was setting up a company, and you'd have to move to Champaign, Illinois, which is a beautiful part of the world, but I can't move to America for family reasons. You know, I'm happy here. So I sort of wrote to him and said, hey, I would, you know, I'd love to work for you. I've got these are my credentials kind of thing, but fortunately I can't move to Champaign. In fact, I can't move to America. You know, would you still be interested? Fully expecting him to say no, go away sort of thing, but it was worth a try. Always wanted to work for him. And then he said yes. So that was a start of an amazing journey. TeamPrize, the company, was founded, and, you know, we got version 1 out the door, and version 2, 3, 3.5, and we were so successful as this little startup doing the cross-platform and Eclipse integration to Team Foundation Server that Microsoft decided to buy us one day. And went through all the whole thing, and that was how I ended up working for Microsoft.
So back up a little bit. You were working on an Eclipse plugin for TFS in your spare time.
Yes, as you do.
So I guess the part I'm having trouble with is just the initial assumption that that's a needed thing. It sounds like it is, because apparently not only was a company created, became successful, and then purchased, but you also happened to be working on it. What kind of environment would you use TFS and Eclipse? I would think Eclipse people would want to use like Subversion. Eclipse people.
Yeah, I mean, version control, you know, just version control is obviously very fragmented in the world. Lots of very popular version control products, and none of them really have more than, say, 20-25% of the market. So I'd been working on the project I was working on at the time was a pure .NET project, but we had Java guys in the company as well. And it was actually our project was sort of a web service front end to some business logic that we were coding in .NET. And it also had Java groups talking into it as well as, you know, .NET people talking into this web service. So mm-hmm. I could see the need for Java to talk, you know, Java projects being involved in this same overall big project that was all stored in TFS. And of course, TFS is more than just source control. You know, it's got all the work items and stuff and things like requirements and bugs that they all don't care about what language you happen to be writing your code in. A requirement needs to be implemented across everything. And so that's kind of where storing everything in one place made sense. And TFS, I particularly enjoyed and particularly liked compared to the product I was using before. I thought, well, people are definitely going to want to do it. So I thought I'd give it a go. And it had some interesting challenges in terms of, you know, talking to .NET web services from Java and all that sort of stuff. It was, you know, there's some good, interesting challenges there. So
I'm looking at a screenshot in a PowerPoint that I found online that shows IDE integration of this Foundation server. And, you know, we mentioned TFS recently on the show, and we had some positives and some negatives. People are very passionate about their source control. What I'm interested in talking to you about, though, is less about religious arguments around source control, but more about the idea that I'm looking at a screenshot within the Eclipse Team Foundation server. It says Team Foundation server exploring, and it has a picture of a bug form. Someone's filling out a bug. And then right next to it is Visual Studio, which, you know, honestly looks exactly like Eclipse, except for the tabs are curvier in Eclipse. I mean, it's the same icons. It's the same exact form. It looks like the same thing. Is that true? Is it identical?
Yeah. In that screenshot, who's the bug assigned to you, by the way? I'm just interested who the screenshot's from.
It says bug assigned to nobody, area adventure works, created bug.
Oh, okay.
Created by Martin Woodward. There you are.
There we go. It's always good. It's amazing where your screenshots turn up.
That's funny. March 11th of last
year.
There's
more than just me working on this project.
Yes. You are checking in C Martin Demo BS Billing Service. some Java
thing. Classic billing service, hello world, bad example.
I didn't even notice that.
What was the question? I forgot. Well,
I'm looking at Eclipse, and it looks identical to Visual Studio. Big integrated IDEs are big integrated IDEs, it seems. But
exactly.
I'm looking at Team Explorer, and they both look like they're exactly the same. Are you writing this to basically copy? I mean, like, do you just take exactly what they do in VS and then just do the exact same thing?
So there's some extent where that is true. Eclipse has got its own sort of language, you know, in terms of how people use it. So if you were to look at the version control stuff inside of Eclipse, everything lives under a team menu. So, you know, you right-click, and even if you don't currently have version control installed, you right-click, you'd go to team, and then there would be a share project, you know, if you had a project that wasn't bound to anything. And then from that, you would pick your version control provider. And this is just for version control now. So you pick your version control provider, and, you know, be it CVS or TFS or Subversion or Git or something like that. And then when you pick one of those, you then connect up to your version control provider and, you know, check code in and share the project with people on your team. So we, in Eclipse, we live under the team menu. And we don't do anything obnoxious like, you know, stick a great big Visual Studio icon over your Eclipse icon, or, you know, suddenly make it so you can't check in anything apart from C Sharp or something like that. You know, it's all very respectful in Eclipse, and we stick to the sort of UI design conventions for coding in Eclipse. So we stick to all those. But then there's a bunch of other stuff that's not version control, that's things like work items and builds, and, you know, being able to do a build and being able to look at build results, those sorts of things. A server build, so TFS build. And you want to do all those without leaving your IDE. Well, some people want to do all those without leaving the IDE. You know, there's you talk about religious debates about version control. But, you know, there's always religious debates about, are you an in the IDE kind of guy or an outside the IDE kind of guy? And this is all inside the IDE, inside Eclipse. But yeah, in terms of that side, we try to be very much authentic to Visual Studio. We do change things a little bit around to make it more Eclipse-y. So, for instance, when you're doing a build, there's no point bringing up, if you want to create a new build, you don't want to create a new, you know, build against a solution file. You probably in Eclipse are more likely to want to create a build against, an Ant script because Ants, you know, what they got using the Java world, or Maven is also very common in the Java world. So, we don't show you a solution file. We show you Ant files and Maven files, and you go pick your Ant or Maven build script and go run a build. But in terms of the wording, though we live in the Eclipse places, we use the TFS words. So, and that confuses some people, you know, when they've come from, say, Subversion or something like that. So checkout for us is, hey, server, I'd like to edit this file, not, I'd like to download this file, which, you know, which is what it means to a Subversion person, or we have get and check in rather than update and things like that. So we use the TFS words, but in the Eclipse places. Does that make sense?
I see. So you people who are used to Eclipse will go looking for the command. They'll find it in the right place. It just may be using the TFS term.
Yeah, you're still using a different product, though. You're still using TFS. We don't try and pretend we're Subversion or something like that. We very much surface TFS in your face kind of thing, and you know, make you very aware that you are using this sort of system. So it means that people who've learned TFS, or, you know, quite a lot of people, like I did, switch IDEs a lot, and it makes that part easy. It also means that there's only one set of training for people to do and stuff. You know, when they're getting familiar, they can ask anyone in their company, hey, how do we do something with source control, or how do we branch, how do we do a build? And the .NET guy could tell the Eclipse guy how to do it, and they would both get there, or vice versa.
This is all written in Java, so everything inside
of
Eclipse
is written
in Java?
Yeah, it's all 100% Java code. There's a little bit of native code in there to do some stuff that Java can't do well. So we also, as well as, it's like 99.99% Java code, and then we have a little bit of native code that that does things like setting files read-only reliably, which Java can't do in all versions of Java, and doing some locking and talking to Kerberos. We do some authentication hooks, as I say, on Linux. You might want to hook into your platform's Kerberos libraries. If you've bound your Linux workstation to Active Directory, for example, and you want single sign and all that, so we use a bit of native code as well. But that's using JNI. You know, we're not doing anything crazy like equivalent of sort of p-invoking out to some .NET assembly or running Mono as well as Java or anything crazy like that. It's all Java.
And this works on just on Eclipse on Windows or Eclipse on
Eclipse
Linux?
Everywhere. Yeah, I mean we Microsoft, I mean, people listening to this will know a horrible term of dog fooding. So we dog food, we use it ourselves. We have like a third of a team on Windows, a third on Mac, and a third on Linux developing day to day. And that catches most things because screen layouts tend to be a bit different on different platforms. And obviously the difference between, say, Unix file syntax and Windows file syntax is very different. So, just dog fooding on those three things catches a lot of issues, and then we go test on other platforms like Solaris and AIX and HPUX, those sorts of things. We run everywhere that Eclipse runs, everywhere that Java runs.
How does that work? How do you test all those things? Do you have a lab somewhere that's got Solaris?
Yeah, we have a lab, and you know, we have a, it's amazing the hardware you can find lying around in Microsoft. We went looking for so we had an AI Xbox that was, we had an old version of AI X 5.8, 5.9 or something like that. And one particular customer was having a problem with their Kerberos implementation on AI X 6.1. And we didn't have that in our lab. So we went around looking around Microsoft and found somebody else who happened to be getting a new AI Xbox in. So we went and borrowed their AI Xbox for a bit and did some testing. So it's amazing. Microsoft's a lot more mixed than people realize, I think, you know. We develop for all sorts of platforms as well as our own.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
One time I took a Mac into Microsoft to the where the guys that make Office for the Mac, and they have a Mac lab there. There's a guy with a Mac lab. He's got like 40 Macs, and you basically walk in with your Mac, and he puts the Microsoft image of the Mac OS X.
OS 10 on, yeah.
OS 10, rather.
I've not had that image. I don't know if they still do that anymore.
Yeah.
There's a lab down in a Mac BU, on Silicon Valley, and they have just this rack of like tables full of Mac Minis where they do all their automated testing, because, you know, Microsoft are big at test automation, and so they have all their UI test automation scripts running on all these Mac Minis in a huge lab. It's just sat there. It's bizarre to see.
But I'm still trying to get my head around. You're in Northern Ireland, so are you the only Java person, or are there others?
No, there are others. We have so TeamPrize, the company, when we sold the technology, you know, the source code and everything, over to Microsoft. And then all the developers and a couple of other people were hired by Microsoft as well. And so we came to work for Microsoft. We had to go through the whole interview process. That was interesting, going through all the technical interviews and all that sort of thing, which was a surprising thing at the time. We didn't realize we were going to go through a technical interview. You know, we'd never been bought before, whereas Microsoft are obviously experts at buying people. So we just turned up one day in a conference room, expecting, you know, a chat, because we used to talk to the TFS team all the time anyway. And then, you know, I went off and talked to one of the guys, one of the managers in the TFS team, and he asked me to code some questions. You know, he asked me how I would, how I would convert a integer to a string or something, or vice versa. No, a string to an integer, I think it was, or something like that. And I was like, I'll just use, you know, integer.parseInt, or whatever.
It's a weird question.
How would you code it? And I'm like, oh, I do. I think, can you write it on a whiteboard? And I started. And I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. Is this an interview? And he's like, yes. So I'm like, oh, okay. So then we had technical interviews for the day. And all the guys from TeamPrize, they were based in Illinois, and they all moved to North Carolina. So the Team Foundation server team is split between North Carolina and Redmond. And, you know, there's a big bunch of guys in North Carolina. And so that's where all the TeamPrize guys moved to. And then a few other Microsoft people came and joined the team as well, which was good. So it's a lot easier to recruit Java people around North Carolina for some reason than in Redmond, you know.
Hmm. It's interesting that Microsoft is doing more stuff on other platforms that aren't Windows. Like, I mean, just the fact that you're saying that you've got this running everywhere, you know, Solaris and AIX and all over the place, And then I just downloaded OneNote for the iPhone.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, isn't that crazy?
And all the Bing stuff as well that they do. The Bing iPhone apps are incredibly popular.
Yeah, so I mean, it's just, but, it's like, what other stuff is running around this company that we don't know about?
Yeah, I mean, like, System Center do a lot of stuff as well. I mean, we get to see a lot of these people because obviously TFS is used a lot internally in Microsoft as a source control system and work items. And so these sorts of people tend to come out of the woodwork to us. We hear about them all the time, you know, because they need to use our client to talk to TFS from mm-hmm. non-Windows platforms. It's, you know, it's what we use internally in Microsoft to do it. And so it's interesting to hear about them all. The Silverlight team are ones we use a lot. You know, he uses a product a lot. Obviously, they're big on the Mac. And the Silverlight CLR guys were one of our biggest early customers at Microsoft when we were at Team Price.
Ah, okay. So you're... Interesting. So the Silverlight team that makes Silverlight work on the Mac is running Eclipse on the Mac, or they're running...
They actually use... We have a command line as well. So they use the command line mostly, and it's all into their automation stuff. So those guys editing away, you know, whatever they use, Vi or Vim or Emacs, whatever. I don't think they use much hex code on the Mac. They just hack away and then check in using the command line. You know, tf check in a certain file and off they go and work. And all the build process as well that they have to build the Silverlight on Mac OS X. You know, to make it compile on Mac OS X. And all that build stuff's automated using our command line as well, which runs anywhere Java runs again.
Oh, so it's a command line Java application as well.
Yeah. So just like the command line application for you know, when you install Visual Studio, you get a TF command which allows you to talk to Team Foundation Server. That's running in .NET if you install, you know, just Visual Studio. But we have a Java version of the command line and it runs Java. So there's a bit of overhead there in terms of firing up a JVM, just like there is in .NET, firing up the CLR. But it works pretty well. And there's some tricks to keep it around in memory and stuff. So, yeah, it works quite well.
Now I'm a remote guy and I know what it's like to be remote. And I know that, you know, sometimes you get looked at a little differently. People treat you slightly differently because you're remote. Sometimes they're frustrated that you're remote, and you're probably, as a remote person in another time zone, it's an even bigger problem. Mm. But it's one thing to be remote. It's another to be remote in another time zone. But to be remote and running Java and in another time zone, doesn't that make you feel a little separate? Is that a problem? And how long have you worked here now?
Well, a year and a quarter now. So year and a quarter, year and a half. No, I would say. In some ways, well, maybe it does make me feel a bit separate. So I'm officially a program manager, you know, so even though I do some development, I check in code into the Eclipse plugin, into Team Explorer Everywhere. Mm-hmm. But I'm a program manager, and so kind of my job's to be out there figuring out what we need to do for the product. And I think being remote kind of helps you stay separate from the whole Redmond bubble. You know, there's this bit of a, you can easily, the huge campus that is Microsoft, you can easily forget that there's a world outside your window that doesn't know anything about you, that doesn't know anything about Microsoft technologies, you know. Whereas being out here in my little field in Randallstown and living out, you know, in the field, as you call it in Microsoft terms, but living out in the community, I think it really helps me keep the perspective as to what the real world's like, what people with proper jobs have to put up with, and what their frustrations are. Does it help you being remote, do you think, from staying out of that whole Microsoft thing?
I've talked about it before on the show. I call it the Redmond reality distortion field.
There you go.
I give the Redmond guys a hard time because it's all I have is the ability to do that, is to give them a hard time because they're there. But, you know, I just remind them that when was the last... I mean, this is the thing, and I get in trouble for this regularly, but, I mean, you know how it is. You talk to someone who's maybe worked there 20, 30 years, and you say something like, when was the last time you shipped something outside of Microsoft? You know, because it's frustrating to talk to people who think they have it all figured out. right? They think they have the way the software works in the real world all figured out. And then you find that maybe they've never worked anywhere else. So they know how to ship software at Microsoft. But, you know, I really respect people who quit Microsoft, go off and like work for an insurance company or something and suffer, and then come back. You see what I'm saying?
Right, yeah. And that's, I had an interesting one of those very recently. So I was talking to somebody, and we were doing some work and we were trying to figure out how to do something. And in the Windows side, the command line, when it needs to do a particular thing, if it couldn't figure out what to do, it would pop up a window and it would, you know, ask a question in this window and have a whole windowing interface to solve it. And I was like, you do realize we can't, you know, I can't do that from Linux. And they're like, why not? I was like, pardon me? Why can't you pop up a dialogue? Is it not technically possible? And, you know, went down this whole, surely you can just call this API and look, you can see you can pop up a window. I'm like, I could technically maybe pop up a window if someone happened to be logged into a graphical interface, but most of the time they're SSH'd in and they're not really actually, you know, they don't have an X window connection back, and command lines just don't do that on Linux. You know, it's just, yeah, it was funny. Just people, there's some assumptions which people make, which they don't realize they're making, just from the background in sort of Microsoft and in technology and things. And hopefully being remote helps some of that. But there is frustrations as well. The time zone is probably the biggest frustration for me. I mean, it's not too bad because the majority of my team are in North Carolina, which is only sort of 5 hours different, 4 hours at the moment. But, you know, Redmond's a real pain because you guys start, you know, at 5 o'clock, and if I worked normal hours, then I should be finishing around about then. And so if I want to have any meetings with anyone, it's always eating into family time and things like that. That's the only frustration, I think. That and not being able to get around a whiteboard together. You know, this time, I haven't found an adequate replacement for getting around a whiteboard. The closest I found is just pointing a webcam at a whiteboard physically and drawing on it. Because even all those fancy whiteboard programs and all those sorts of things, none of those work very well, I found. I don't know, unless you've found anything better than that.
Well, I think there's a whiteboard program built into Windows Live Messenger, and I bought a fifty dollar Wacom tablet, but no, it's not the same.
Yeah, they never work very well, and your writing's always a bit childish, and even with a tablet PC, it's never the same as, because if you look at what you draw on a whiteboard when you're talking on a whiteboard, the value isn't in what you've written on the whiteboard. Often it's like a squiggle that nobody could read. You know, if you took a picture of it later, it doesn't mean anything. It was the process of getting up and standing up with a pen and explaining it to somebody and talking it through that was the valuable thing. So, I don't know. That's the thing I miss most, a whiteboard.
Yeah. Do you think that this will last a long time? I mean, how long can you work at Microsoft remotely from Northern Ireland doing Java? At some point, will you have to stop or will you get tired?
You know, I've been doing it for 6 years and I'm doing okay so far. Seem to be doing quite well. There's definitely, so in Microsoft terms, you're what's called an individual contributor. You know, you don't have people reporting to you. Mm-hmm. So there's a limit in terms of career, but you know, as an individual contributor, as an IC, they call them, that you can get to before you don't have anyone reporting to you. But in Microsoft, that's actually a lot. You can get a lot higher, and you know, you can get very far in the company and never have anyone reporting to you. It's amazing. Microsoft's an interesting company because 1 minute you find the same thing. You know, you get the same people you get working everywhere in parts of the company. So the same, you know, stupid people work here just like they work everywhere. But then you'll turn the corner and you'll meet the most brilliant person you've ever met in your entire life. You know, you realize that you're never ever going to be remotely as clever as this person was before breakfast. I was at a dinner when I was over in Redmond recently, and I was sat down at one of these fancy dinner things, and you know, you go around the table shaking hands with people like at a wedding reception when you come in, you know, everybody shakes hands and sort of introduces themselves and all that, and sat down and I shake hands with one guy. We have a chat, you know, introduce him. I turn to my right and this guy goes, you know, hello, I'm Anders. It didn't sound like Sean Connery, but it was Anders Hallberg. And I was just like, yeah, I know. And what am I going to talk to you about now, Anders, for the next half hour while we're having dinner, you know? I'm a Java guy. I barely understand, Link and all these new things that are in C#. But we ended up having a great conversation. He was annoyingly well read, but I was a physicist, and I never did computer science. I did physics, and I was talking to. We were talking about some stuff around there, and how you could. And I think the conversation ended up about how you could possibly use computer modeling to model superstition. And how maybe mm-hmm. that's what's happening with the current economic climate or something like that. It was a bizarre conversation, but good. But there's an example of a brilliant guy who works there. So.
Yeah, it is funny. There are stupid people at the company. When you said that, though, I was thinking to myself, yes, but our stupid people are just so passionate.
Forcefully stupid. Well, not stupid is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. Forcefully there.
Yeah, what they lack in common sense, they make up for being super excited.
Yeah, I found myself saying super a lot since I've started with my stuff. My kids hate it. And the other thing is I've started reading dates wrong. So I've worked for American companies for nearly 10 years now. Since working with Microsoft, I'm started doing dates of the month before the day. And I read a date wrong that my wife, my wife gave me a date of some important thing and I put it in my diary in the wrong month because I'd read it the wrong way around and I got into a lot of trouble there.
Yeah, I can totally relate. All right. Well, thanks for talking to me, Martin. I really appreciate it. It's good to talk to other remote people at Microsoft, especially ones that aren't necessarily working on typical Microsoft stuff.
Indeed.
This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.